It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Schizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. It's also available as a podcast. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. And I'm also on Facebook. It's not just me. I'm producing and hosting today, but calling us from his palatial Georgia plantation is film critic for the Gainesville Times and one half of the Film Fix, Mr. Jeff Marker. How are you, sir?
I'm fine today. How are you?
Very good. It is a plantation, isn't it?
Sure. We all live in plantations down here. Haven't you heard?
Insert Mandingo comment here, and we'll move on. Well, we got a few titles that are on DVD and Blu-ray, and of course we have a big movie and a small movie opening in Indianapolis. But we'll talk about the film that both Jeff and I saw, not together, but we saw them on the same evening. We probably had cinematic moments at the same time.
Yes, what a happy evening that was.
Okay, spoiler alert. Wait a minute. It is the next collaboration between actor Adam Sandler and director Dennis Dugan, who have collaborated before on Zohan, Chuck and Larry, Big Daddy, and Happy Gilmore. Well, he's back together with them on Grown Ups, and this is one of those films. Well, let's see, Kevin James, Chris Rock, Rob Schneider, David Spade. Anybody else is still living in the guest house of Mr. Sandler that am I missing?
No, the way I put it in my print review is that this is Adam Sandler and everybody who's ever been on Saturday Night Live.
That's possibly true. So, anyway, we're going to play for you the trailer. Here's the trailer.
In 1978, they were the best of friends.
Everybody say championship.
Now, they're getting back together for the first time in over 30 years.
Iggy!
Hey, what's up, Lenny?
Buddy, I thought you were going to start working out.
What does that mean?
You're fat?
No!
Next summer, they're meeting each other's families.
Oh, and this will be your mother.
My wife.
I'm sorry.
I'm not.
Oh, grody.
Learning about their kids.
Mommy, I want some milk.
Come here. Give me a little something.
Your son is so cute. How old is he?
48 months. That's four. Yeah.
And reliving their past.
Rope on a tree, baby. Class is in session.
Oh, baby.
That's
a mistake.
Let go.
I can't let go. Just get it.
Sandler, Kevin James, Chris Rock, Rob Schneider, and David Spade. Grown Ups.
So, Jeff.
Yes.
I went through some of Mr. Sandler's resume. Okay, IMDb, because we do that. And I wanted to see if there was a pattern of when Mr. Sandler does a serious film, what does he follow it up with? See if you're shocked at all. He followed up Punch Drunk Love with Mr. Deeds. He followed up...
Which was tolerable.
Tolerable. Yeah, I think I called it the best Sandler comedy at that time, which wasn't saying a whole lot. He followed up Spanglish with The Longest Yard. Yeah. You remember, and my favorite story on this, Eddie Albert died the day The Longest Yard opened in theaters, the remake. Good for him.
That says it all.
It does say it all.
That's the best review ever, possibly.
He followed up Rain Over Me with I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Which you couldn't have fallen very much farther.
Right. And he followed up Funny People with the film that's opening in theaters today. I would like, Jeff, if you could, to ask the listeners what you asked me after we saw this film. I don't know if you remember what you asked me, but I thought I'd set it up for you.
Are you dumber for having seen it?
quite possibly. Yeah.
It really is that.
Yeah. I'm afraid so. And this is what, you know, usually in a sequel, that's when you add so many more characters and you just, it's kind of like a basketball team that doesn't know how to pass. They just keep chucking up threes and hopefully something will land. And I think Shaq has a better free throw record than this film right here, because there's so much riffing. And I'm going to give you credit, sir. You I remember you accused the film Strange Wilderness of just giving up. Did you have that feeling with this film?
Yes, I did. And possibly even earlier than in Strange Wilderness, if that's possible. They, you know, all the guys, we meet each of them, and of course, you know, they're reliving glory days from their eighth grade basketball team, which is just pathetic to me.
For the story, the coach dies and they return, so we already have an obnoxious big chill going.
Yes, we do. And then it kind of switches. It reminded me of Couples Retreat from last year, where, you know, you've got four couples that get together. The difference is they add in their kids, and it felt like there were about 20 characters in this movie, and 10 of them were completely unnecessary. I have no idea why the Maya Rudolph character's mother comes along on the trip.
Because you need,
then
you
need
a sassy
like Tyler.
Yeah, like Tyler Perry. You need a sassy black woman. That's why.
I guess that's all we were missing, and so they brought her along.
Yeah, and the ladies, I'm built that I should have a sitcom with a hot wife, but yes, we live in a world, in a cinematic world, where Salma Hayek is married to Adam Sandler, and Maria Bello is married to Kevin James, and by the way, Fat Guys Falling is so funny, as well as women breastfeeding with a four-year-old, which is in the trailer, mind you.
Yeah, most of the funny bits are in the trailer. In fact, you know, you asked me if I felt this movie gave up. I don't know if they ever started to put out an effort, let alone, you know, in order to then be able to give up. Because once they gather at the house, nothing happens for the longest time.
Right. I mean, the biggest conflict is whether the Sandler character and his wife and family go to Milan. Wow.
Right. That's tough, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to feel sorry for Adam Sandler when he's a big-time Hollywood producer, lives in a palatial home with a nanny, and is married to
Salma Hayek.
Yes, who plays a world-class fashion designer who's about to show in Milan. Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah. And I'd say maybe it's not so much giving up, but it seemed like they stalled. I mean, with Couples Retreat, you can't say no to that project. You're going to just riff on camera in a beautiful surroundings. And this one, I don't know which producer's lake house this is where they shot this. But I remember the film just stopped so they could go to a water park.
Yeah, no reason at all. That's sort of the episode that I point to as Exhibit A, how this film just goes nowhere. They spend, what, 5 or 6 minutes at this water park. We have a couple of cameos, which I won't ruin, and then exactly one very minute character development for, you know, the 15th most important character. There is just no reason to go there at all. But that's the film in a nutshell. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, A Couple's Retreat, I didn't like very much, but I could, after that movie, I could say, hey, there were story events in that movie. There were even character actions. But in this one, it's hard to find anything that actually happened.
Squirting breast milk, not funny anymore, right? I think we've that's on the list. Just checking.
Yeah, that's on the list. A long list from this movie. Kevin James falling down.
Go boom.
Okay, yeah.
And by the way, it's nice to know they could afford all the great one-hit wonders and classic rock hits from the late 70s and early 80s.
It does prove that classic 70s rock can solve all of your problems. That's maybe the point.
Wow. But and now, of course, the big important question, because never mind the two old fuddy-duddies, was your audience laughing?
They did. They did.
Mine too.
But, you know, it died down. I got to say, for the first half hour, the audience was very much with it. In fact, there was a woman who got looks because she cackled so loudly and so often. But then by the end, they had pretty much died down. A really good screening gives an applause at the end, and nobody did that. Everybody just got the heck out of there. And so I think even the people who were with it early on ended up losing it.
I got a feeling Sandler Nation's going to wrap around this one for some reason.
Maybe they will. I don't know. And good for them. You know, good Lord, we need something fun to watch this summer. And if they enjoy it, then I'm happy for them.
That's right. And I'm sure on the DVD, which I don't think I'm that curious of, when it's the five of them or four of them, there has to be no script, right? They just riffed for 20, 30 minutes and kept the best material?
Well, the writers are Adam Sandler and Fred Wolf, whose biggest credit is Saturday Night Live. And so I have to think there was just very little script here.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. Here's our reaction to grown-ups.
Turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off!
No, seriously, Rent the Big Chill. I'm telling you, it's more things happen. And that's a little more serious, but still far better. That's just me.
Now, you mentioned being curious. You sort of alluded to being curious about the DVD. I know you, and you're a glutton for punishment. And I'm going to make a public bet right now.
Oh, you're not doing this, you bastard. Oh, you're not. Go ahead.
Oh, it's not a real bet. I'm not going to, you know.
Yes, you are.
You with any punishment.
Yes, you will.
But I'm betting you. One day, Matt Soucy calls me and says, "Okay, I did it."
No, no, horse pucky. I know you. All right, little inside trader secret. Every year, Jeff and I bet on the Michigan Ohio State football game, and a loser has to watch the movie choice of the winner. And I know you, Macbeth. You're keeping this one in your hip pocket. I know.
Well, I've just doomed myself because now, you know, it's out in the public, and so I don't know if you'll even if you do watch the DVD. Well, you're an upstanding guy. You'd let me know, but I think now I've just made it impossible for you to do it.
God, I just want them to win once. Just one. I mean, with or without Rodriguez, just so I can just inflict some cinematic pain on you.
It'll happen someday. It really will.
Someday, yeah. Thank you. All right, let's move on. Also opening in theaters at the Art House Circuit is the new film from Rodrigo Garcia, the writer and director of Nine Lives. It's called Mother and Child. Now, check out this cast. You have Annette Bening. You have Samuel L. Jackson, Naomi Watts, and coming off the bench, Kerry Washington, Jimmy Smits, David Morse, Cherry Jones, and much, much more. Here's the trailer.
I never saw you with a new haircut, with new shoes. Did you hear the rain one night when I heard it?
It's often this that you move to and from this area several times, but you always return here.
This part of the world is as good as any.
It's mostly single people in the building, you know, no children so far.
We could be good parents. We just haven't been able to. Blood is important, but it's the time spent together that really matters.
Time spent together? Why didn't you shut me up?
Michael, Karen, right?
I have some time before I have to be home. I'm getting a cup of coffee.
Do you mind if I join you?
All right.
I didn't realize it was just the two of us.
Hope you don't think it's inappropriate.
I want to meet your parents and your friends, and I want to be able to name the baby myself.
Motherhood should be something simpler than that.
I know in my heart that we will meet one day, and you will forgive me.
Little one, little love, little hands, look how they hold.
I want a child of my own.
I have made a commitment. That's my baby.
But if that's my child you're carrying, I want you to come back and be with me. And
there's no You don't know who I am or what I want.
Every thought in my head takes me back to her. I have nothing to give. Every part of
your... Now, I have to admit, I didn't see Nine Lives, but it's similar as far as storytelling. We have three intertwining stories: the Kerry Washington character, the Annette Bening character who gives up her child for adoption, when she's when she's 14, and the girl grows up to be Naomi Watts, and there are three There's three people you don't want to spend time with, although maybe slightly more than the gang from Grown Ups. But I have to say the performances are so strong, especially with Annette Bening, and it's great seeing her still doing quality work, whether people see it or not, at this point in her career. Bully for her. It's also from the producer of 21 Grams, so there is that intertwining storyline that I don't think you're going to slash your wrists watching. Everybody in the film is really solid, good performances across. Nice to see Sam Jackson not screaming for a change in an action movie. And nice to see David Morse not playing a villain, and that's a shout-out to my wife, who always wonders what happened post-St. Elsewhere. So it's in one screen in Indianapolis. You know which one it is, on the north side. Go check it out. It's a nice breath of fresh air from the rest of the summer blockbuster movies. And it's a film like this, even though it opened months ago, but we're just getting it here in Indy, that keep this summer from apparently, supposedly, allegedly being the worst summer in blockbuster history. We might chat about that a little bit later on. But definitely, if you're a grown-up, go check out Mother and Child.
Nicely done. I have to ask, does Cherry Jones actually get some screen time?
She gets a couple of scenes. She plays the nun that sets up the adoption. So I'd say she's got maybe two or three scenes. She gets off the bench, bangs a couple threes, and sits down. Cherry Jones, I think, prior to this, I think Cherry Jones' biggest role is the sheriff in Signs and Matt Damon's mother in Ocean's 12.
Yeah, yeah, and she saved that section of the movie, by the way. It was getting awfully boring, and then she and Super Dave showed up and were outstanding. She's one of those, you and I both really love her, and anytime you get them to just repeat her name, that was Cherry Jones, in case you missed it. So the people become aware of, you know, this actress who has amazing chops. You know, the more we can do that, the better.
Yeah, and I mean, she spends most of her time on the stage in New York, and occasionally, I know she was in 24, but she's that lady, although you should know Cherry Jones, great name, and she's a great talent. But yeah, she's one of those, she hasn't gotten a starring vehicle. Well, as far as we know, at least not in a, you know, 3,000 screen movie that opens 3,000 screens, but it is really nice to see her. And, you know, I'm sure it took a couple of days to bang out, and she did it and did it like a craftsman should.
I like any movies that combines, Samuel Jackson and Cherry Jones.
Yeah, that helps keeps the pool going, at least as far as others. Not just that game, but yeah, nice cast, really good. And nice seeing Jimmy Smith. I hadn't seen Smith in a while, and you know, he's put on a little bit of weight, but he's got more experience. So it's more than just it's better than Switch, and not the Eddie Albert series, just the Ellen Barkin movie. Why am I talking about that movie? I don't know.
Wow, that's a blast.
Yes, that's why you're here, among other things. All right, I got one other movie note here in Indianapolis. If you don't have any plans right now, well, after the show, but the IMA has their summer series, the Outdoor Movie Summer Series, and tonight, Tim Burton's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Mr. Marker, your thoughts?
I just wonder how dated it's going to seem. I mean, have you watched any of the Pee-wee Herman stuff in the last few years?
No, I have not. I'm surprised my child is... Well, I don't know why an 8-year-old girl would ask about that, but no, we have not.
I have. Unfortunately, I checked out Big Top Pee Wee, which don't bother.
Ooh.
That one hurt. I don't know. It seemed fresh way back in the 80s when I first saw, the TV special of his stage show.
On HBO with Phil Hartman's Captain Carl.
Exactly. Oh, and it's classic.
Yes.
And it seemed irreverent back then, but, you know, post-Simpsons Family Guy and all sorts of movies sort of mocking what used to be innocent childhood TV and movie fare, I don't know, it's not aging all that well. So, but then again, I've never watched it out on the lawn, with 100 of my closest friends, or how I assume that's what that event is going to be like. And
right.
It's a... Pretty interesting choice, I think, for a gathering like that.
Well, maybe one should check it out and maybe think about it from the directing standpoint, maybe to see how Burton has evolved as a director.
I'll be honest, I keep forgetting that he directed that movie. That's very much unlike so much of his other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I got a feeling it'll have probably the energy, obviously the if not the absurdity, for lack of a better term, the weirdness that Burton is known for with his pictures.
Yeah. This seems like Burton skewing toward John Waters. He's really in love with campy Americana, and I do remember just really loving that aspect of it.
And less dog feces.
Nice.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what's new and what's old on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Anything about either one of them.
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. And I'm also on Facebook. Jeff Marker, the Gainesville Times, and the Film Fix is sitting in with me via telephone. And we have a new film out from the action team of Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon called Green Zone. And it's shot like a Bourne film. It looks like a Bourne film, but it's not a Bourne film.
No, it's not a Bourne film. It's a U.S. war in the Middle East film, which is going to be very divisive for people, I think.
Yeah, Matt Damon plays a soldier who finds out that, the government's not really telling and doing everything it's supposed to do. And it's his target, well, of course, Greg Kinnear. They're now separated after Stuck on You. Amy Ryan is in this film as well as Brendan Gleeson. Here's some audio.
General, my name is Roy Miller. I'm a chief warrant officer with the U.S. Army.
Why are you here, Miller?
I came here to bring you in. What do you think you're doing here, Miller? You're off reservation for a reason. What is it?
I came here to find weapons and save lives.
It's a little more complicated than that.
Well, not to me, it isn't.
Lori Jane, Wall Street Journal.
Does it make any sense we're still coming up empty?
No. I read your articles. You said a source named Magellan met with U.S. officials prior to the war.
No, I'm not discussing sources.
Who is Magellan?
Magellan's the best source we ever had. Have you ever even been to any of Magellan's sites?
No.
There's nothing there.
Chief, we're here to do a job. The reasons don't matter.
They matter to me. People are dying out there. I want to know why.
I want to know what really happens, and we've got to find Magellan.
You set up whatever you need to set up on your end. I'm bringing him in. I know what you did.
We got a problem.
As long as he's out there, he's a threat.
We have a plan.
ETA?
12 minutes, sir.
You take him out.
I've got him. This is a kill, no catch or mission.
You have no idea who you're dealing with here.
Get with the program or get out of my way.
You're my prisoner. I'm bringing you in.
Green Zone.
Jeff, I think Green Zone is a film that suffers from bad timing because this was the first war film I think we both got to see after the Academy Award winning Hurt Locker, and that's a tough act to follow.
It really is, and it's a different kind of movie. She, in the Hurt Locker, Catherine Bigelow gets into the psychology of a soldier. With Green Zone, my co-host Jonathan Hickman, I have to give him credit for this. He said this really felt more like an Oliver Stone movie than anything else. There's a bit of he called it revisionist history. I think it depends on your reading of the real events in the Middle East, whether you consider it history or revisionist history. Either way, it's very politically motivated, and it's going to kind of depend on, you know, the individual viewer, whether that ruins the party for you. Otherwise, I thought it was a well-made action film. Did you respond the same way?
I've had complaints in the past with Mr. Greengrass's film. I find it strange that I love Bloody Sunday, which I think was one of the best films that came out that year. United 93 was the best film of that year, in my opinion. And, you know, the last two Bourne films, I needed Dramamine. I don't think I was as nauseous with this one, and there are times when you have a war film like this, to get my head out of the politics, I tend to think of it as a cop film. And is this a cop film? Yes, to a certain degree it is, with a really corrupt department. The problem for me was once it got to the last third, I started getting hit over the head with the message that war is bad. And following up, watching this after watching just a really well-made non-stance about soldiers in battle or in work, I felt tired after watching this.
Yeah, we've hashed out everyone's disagreements over Iraq and Afghanistan in real life, and this kind of felt like it was too late. You know, that dialogue has gotten tired off screen, and now here comes a movie about 5 years too late. The sort of echoing what everybody was talking about. And I do have to admit, you and I have disagreed on this. I didn't mind the filmmaking style of the Greengrass Bourne movies. I could deal with that just fine. I thought it served that material. This, in Green Zone, I even think that he pushes it too far. There are scenes in Green Zone where they're shooting at night and he's not using any additional light, and you can barely even make out what's going on, which to me is just not good movie making.
Mm-hmm. No matter how real it is.
Exactly. Yeah, I can make something that looks real with my camcorder, but none of you want to watch it.
Oh, that's not true. I'd watch it once.
Well, thank you.
And then review it, but no, that's a whole other story. All right, so this is Damon's follow-up from Invictus, and not that we're really following Dollars and Cents, but this does follow the Hollywood tradition. Hardly anybody saw this movie, and that's, well, take that for what it is. I guess it's not the 1960s anymore.
This one may do better on DVD, though. You know, I think it just might.
Okay.
Damon is a draw. It's always safer on DVD. I think people were unsure about, because the trailers clearly made it, you know, revealed that there was a political element to this, and I think people are more likely to sit in their house and watch that than pay $8 to $10 at the theater for it.
Yeah, there's probably you were probably correct there, sir. So here's the thoughts we have on Green Zone.
Matt Damon.
Just a point of note, two other films that are on DVD, I don't think we saw these, but we have listeners that are under the age of 30, so it should be acknowledged. The drama Remember Me, it's a non-glittery film from Robert Patterson. Right, yeah, that's true. And She's Out of My League, which has that guy, who I will always refer to as the boxing spaz from Million Dollar Baby.
Jay Baruchel.
I can't pronounce that. So thank you for. And this guy's got a year because he's in the upcoming Nicolas Cage film, and he was in the voice of How to Train Your Dragon.
It's been a good year, yeah. And he I thought he stole part of Tropic Thunder as well.
That's right. He was in that. I think he's in the. If it was the Judd Apatow chess set, he'd probably be on the far end, if not a pawn.
Yep.
Kind of like Norman Fell and Henry Silva with the Rat Pack, just for a point of reference, folks. So.
You're talking to the under 30 crowd, and you come with Norman Fell. Really?
Shut up. Yes, honey. The Three's Company. Be quiet. My goodness. Also on DVD and Blu-ray, sir, is the Academy Award-nominated The Last Station, the teaming of Helen Mirren and Christopher Plummer. Plummer finally got a nomination in his career. Salute to him. It's the last days of Trotsky without getting a... Or Tolstoy, I should say. The Assassination of Trotsky is a whole other film. And we'll talk about that much later. But it's he's married, and he's trying to just hold on to everything. His power, his control, his money, and Helen Mirren. And why wouldn't you if you're married to Helen Mirren? Here's a trailer.
If you were to become Tolstoy's private secretary, you would be given a great gift. We have a lot to do if we are to get his work to the people.
So glad you're here.
I sneeze sometimes when I get nervous.
I believe that wealth corrupts us all.
It's a keystone of the movement.
Oh, God, I know all about the movement.
I want you to keep a diary. Anything the Countess says.
The survival of our movement depends upon it.
I cannot stand by while they steal my children's inheritance.
You all think he's Christ, don't you?
What?
He thinks he's Christ.
I have a little gift for you.
It's a diary.
It's right what you see around you.
What you see.
You've been keeping something from me.
Have I? Tolstoy does not approve of sexual relations, I know this.
Russia.
This would not be a problem with me. I'm a vegetarian. I am celibate.
The Countess is too interested in making a profit from your work.
You're all plotting against me in my own house!
They have a whole life together. Why do you have to deny that?
You've become a victim of her romantic nonsense.
What do they know about love? I love a romance.
Well, you don't need a husband. You need a Greek chorus.
Love cannot be weak-minded. It cannot be stupid.
Well, Ma doesn't understand my father's goals.
I mean, isn't that what it's about? Freedom and love.
He's her entire life. The work in her mind is theirs together.
I've never stopped loving you.
Of course.
When God knows you, don't make it easy.
I've behaved rather badly, haven't I?
It's from Michael Hoffman, who gave us everything from Restoration to One Fine Day. And it's fun just watching the two of them, Plummer and Mirren, bantering with each other. It's almost a literary version of The Lion in Winter. Instead of a kingdom, it's power and royalties over his writing. If you enjoy seeing grown-up performances, yeah, I say grown-ups a lot on the show, but it's fun watching Mirren and Plummer. Plummer had a really good year last year, if you think about it, between Up and Dr. Parnassus, and now this. So go check this out. Not as many people saw it in theaters. Go check it out on DVD and Blu-ray. Okay, sir, we have some Blu-ray titles. And I asked the question, if you owned a Blu-ray player, Jeff Marker, would you buy these? Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, the Bourne trilogy.
Definitely.
Good, you can have it. That was easy. Sorry. Now, here's one. The courtesy of Shout Factory. Death Race 2000.
No.
No early Sly for you or Carradine at his apex?
No. Come on. You don't need to own that one. You watch that one every 10 to 15 years. You rent it. That's good enough.
Okay. That's fine. Be that way. And the 1950s version of A Star is Born. That's Judy Garland and James Mason, not the god-awful Barbra Streisand Chris Christopherson version.
Yes, of course. Judy Garland in 1950, I'm going to support that.
Very good. Very cool. So there you go. There's something old and something new here at Film Sociology. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we got to pay tribute to a fallen director. Really fallen. He's not getting up. And then a chat with Jeff Marker. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Roger! We're not alone.
We've got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests?
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Sitting in with me via phone from Georgia, Jeff Marker, film critic of the Gainesville Times and one half of the Film Fix, which it's a YouTube clip. Website on that one, Jeff?
Yeah, www.dailyfilmfix.com.
Very good. And before we start chatting a little bit more, we do need to raise a glass and say salute to British director Ronald Neame. I think I'm saying that right. I'll be corrected if I don't. But among the other things, he was a cinematographer back in the 30s and 40s, started directing films in the late 40s. Some of the titles you might be familiar with, is we brought up Judy Garland earlier, the melodrama from 1963, I Could Go On Singing. This is 60s. You talk about 50s Judy Garland. 60s Judy Garland was, oof.
Those were not happy days.
Not good times.
No.
No. But really became known in 1969 for the Academy Award winning The Prime of Miss Jean Brody, which won an Oscar for Dame Maggie Smith. Followed that up with Scrooge, the, how often do you get to say this, Albert Finney musical about A Christmas Carol. And then The Poseidon Adventure from 1972. Were you a 70s disaster movie fan, sir?
Of course, yeah. And I remember Shelley Winters in The Poseidon Adventure. I wasn't old enough to go to the theater in 1972 to see that one. But I do remember seeing it on TV as a kid and thinking it was kind of great. The Odessa File was also a great movie. That was his next.
That's right. He was in that, where he directed that with John Voight. And then another disaster movie, because one wasn't enough in his career, 1979's Meteor with Natalie Wood and Sean Connery, among others.
I think of that as sort of a social problem film. You know, if I could count the number of times that I'm driving home and a meteor nearly hits my car, so.
But it's not the size of Texas.
No
Aerosmith ballads.
No, not for a long time.
That's really okay. And then he collaborated twice in a row with Walter Matthau, the spy comedy Hopscotch with Glenda Jackson, and the Supreme Court comedy First Monday in October with Jill Clayburgh. I saw both of those in the theater with my folks. I'm that old.
Good for you.
Thank you. So, salute, Ronald. We appreciate your work. Jeff Marker, film critic of the Gainesville Times, and one half of the Film Fix. Besides, it's been way overdue to have you on the program. But, sir, you've made online news recently. I think you're, what, in the top five most hated people online right now?
This is payback for the DVD of Grown Ups joke, isn't it?
You wrote the review, not me, sir. But apparently, I've checked around. I'm not a searcher of Rotten Tomatoes or any of those. Most of the guys I listen to you, and you know, the guys at the Indiana Film Journalists Association. But Jeff Marker said no to Toy Story 3, and apparently there's been some repercussions online. So it hasn't really hurt you.
Well, yeah, some folks on YouTube call me dirty names only because I didn't like Toy Story 3. And let me point out that unless they were other critics, there was no way they could have seen the film when they were calling me dirty names. And so I think this was more a reflection of how closely attached to those characters a lot of people are.
I see. So tell us what your beef was.
Well, my beef, first of all, was I thought they kind of sealed it off with Toy Story 2. You know, they answered the question at the end of Toy Story 2, will Woody go over to Japan with the museum and sort of start anew, or is he going to stick with Andy until the very end, until Andy no longer, you know, wants him or plays with him? And he said, yep, I'm going to stick with Andy. And I took him at his word, and I believed him. When I watched Toy Story 3, and that was still the question, that's disappointing to me. That marks an unnecessary sequel to me. So I didn't think this was necessary at all. And to me, the toys bicker most of the first half hour, and it just seemed like they sort of lost their innocence along the way in this movie as well. And let me point out, to defend myself a little bit,
please.
Lee Unkrich, in a recent interview, said that they really had a hard time coming up with a script because they watched the first two movies and realized that they never planned on making a third. They were really stymied as to how to continue the franchise, and I think it shows that they forced a third movie.
Especially, and for lack of a better comparison from when we talked before, apparently the toys are sent to the preschool version of Dachau.
That's basically what it becomes. Yeah, they get sent to a daycare center, and Lotso Huggenbear isn't as nice as he seems. He's actually sort of he runs the gulag, you know?
Great. It turns into Schindler's List.
Actually, it turns into The Great Escape.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. The Great Escape or Stalag 17.
Or Grand Illusion, to go back even farther and fill in the blank. It's a prison escape movie, and it gets very dark. And I just thought, the thing that I liked best about the first two movies, these were extremely well-written movies, well-crafted. So they're sort of sophisticated on a storytelling level, and yet they were safe for the family. And it's so hard to find movies that are safe for everybody in the family and yet just not drivel. They don't pander. These were really solid movies. And I think they lost that combination. They lost that balance between sophistication and innocence here.
And you weren't welling up in the last 10 minutes?
That's the absolute best part. And if they would have made a short film that consisted mostly of those last few scenes, then I would have been with them all the way.
But you were too busy having your brand name soda and brand name treats.
That wasn't my primary complaint, but it does get to the point where, okay, you're flashing all of your Pixar Disney products at us. I hate to say it, it felt like a commercial at times too.
So how did the kid react? Because who cares what the old guy thinks of the movie?
Yeah, the target demographic, meaning my 5-year-old and Jonathan's 6-year-old, both ended up in our laps.
Uh-oh. About
that. They both ended up kind of being scared by certain parts, kind of disturbed by it. Overall, though, I have to say, I don't think he was traumatized too badly because he was walking around quoting it the following day. So.
Uh-oh. Wow.
It's a bit much. I think this movie... 5 and 6 years old is just about as young as I would want my kid to be if I were going to take him.
Okay. And there's already word that there's two other sequels that are in development. I guess before we get to that, forget that for a second. I'm sorry. Let's do one shining moment. Tell us about the opener.
Oh, Day and Night. This was the most exciting part of the whole movie-going evening. I believe the guy's name is Teddy Newton.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you can correct me if I'm wrong about that. So he's a young animator. Pixar, for a long time, has used those short films to sort of give the up-and-coming animators a chance to direct, and it pays off hugely this time out because this is a rather abstract short where you've got the sort of personification of day and the personification of night sort of being jealous of each other, the things that each of them gets to enjoy in their particular part of the 24-hour day there, and they battle over a little bit, and it ends up being very inventive. You can look back and see sort of shades of some of the Warner Brothers animation and some of the more sort of avant-garde of the early 50s animation like UPA and those sorts of things. And yet, it's graphically very daring, and yet people applaud it afterward because it actually has a bit of a message to it as well. And it's not one of those, it's not like Green Zone where half people are going to disagree. This is a sort of human message. And so this is really an outstanding short. It might be their best.
Wow.
And I know, that's saying something.
Man, and I know they've put out a DVD already of the short collection, so we're ready for volume two at least with this one.
Yeah, we have to be close. I'm pretty sure they can fill another DVD, and I would buy it.
And now you're bringing up in my head Animated Green Zone. can't see it.
Well, that's the video game, right?
Oh, right, right. That's now that's what we need. Paul Greengrass video games.
Oh, we have plenty of Paul Greengrass video games.
Well, that's true, but I was thinking United 93 and Bloody Sunday, and that's inappropriate.
Sure. Well, every movie has a video game these days. So.
Not the ones I have in mind. I'm not going there. All right. So, sir, one of my colleagues, Christopher Lloyd, has declared actually during Prince of Persia that this is possibly the worst summer ever for blockbuster movies. How do you feel about that?
Well, I remember you saying that, and at the time, I said, no, it's too early. Well, he might be on to something, actually. There's just not been a lot to get excited about so far. Everything has sort of not lived up to whatever expectations it might have had. Prince of Persia did tank, and it deserves to tank, and Sex and the City 2 was just awful. Iron Man 2 was enjoyable enough, but you notice that nobody's clinging to it now. It's already sort of, we've already forgotten it. And so you look forward, and I feel like, you know, there's the bat signal, but I wonder if Christopher Nolan has his own signal that we can flash in the sky, because I'm really waiting for his movie Inception to come along in a few weeks and sort of save us from bad sequels and bad remakes of foreign movies.
And grown-ups.
And grown-ups, which is practically a remake anyway.
Which might as well be.
Yeah.
The only other thing I can think of right now, and I don't have my list in front of me because, well, I prepare for my program. But, yeah, I think Christopher Nolan's film and Machete, I don't think that's coming out till August.
I guess, yeah, that's when we can expect that, which might be at least, you know, kind of fun.
And to see how old the Expendables are.
That might be, I don't know whether that's going to be exciting or sad, you know, watching all those actors in The Expendables.
Or both.
You know, I guess the one thing we're not mentioning is if you get excited about Twilight, that's coming out.
I'm sorry. Yeah, how old are we? What gender are we?
Look, I was hated for last week. I'm trying to be, you know.
Oh, you're trying to redeem yourself to the online nation?
Trying to be nicer to the people who own computers. Despicable Me looks like it might be something little bit new.
Steve Carell in animation. We've been on that path, but we could try it again. Sure.
Yeah, we've got the reimagining of Predators.
Oh, jeez, that's Rodriguez too, isn't it?
Sure.
And starring Adrian Brody, so hopefully he won't do things to the Predator that he did with Splice. Please, for the love of God. Oh.
Oh, goodness.
No.
Do you like your Angelina Jolie? She's in Salt. That's coming out.
Oh, that's true. Do we know who's directing that?
No, we don't.
I guess it doesn't matter if you have her, but that's not true. Although, when she works with a good director, like Clint Eastwood or Michael Winterbottom, it actually turns out pretty good.
Yeah, it's Philip Noyce, I believe.
Ah, Patriot
I'm
Games.
I'm sorry to say, that doesn't help me at all. I have no idea.
Patriot Games, Rabbit Through Fence. Clear and Present Danger. Maybe.
Yeah, okay. That may work.
So she has more to do in this one compared to Wanted.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to talk about Wanted or not.
No, let's not. Besides, I'd rather talk about Shoot 'Em Up first, and you know that.
Any chance.
Best use
to bring up Shoot 'Em Up.
Best use of Monica Bellucci and a carrot, but not together.
Oh, my goodness. Moving on from that, the Scott Pilgrim versus the World comes out in August.
Oh, yeah, see, Less Stammering Michael Cera, although Youth and Revolt,
listen,
also on DVD.
That's an Edgar Wright-directed movie. I'm going to see anything Edgar Wright.
Ah, okay, all right. I forgot about that, so thank you. That should be good. Good use of Queen, hopefully, in the soundtrack.
Let's hope. But, you know, I'm scanning the next couple months, and that's really the only thing that might deliver a surprise. And I think that's what we've been missing. It's all very, very predictable so far. We've not seen anything that was much better than we expected. No, nothing has exceeded expectations so far at all.
Oh, wait a minute. The Scientologist put out a movie this week as well. There, it's been mentioned. Let's go on. What? Let's tap into your old title. What old titles have you seen recently, with or without the family?
Well, you know, you mentioned that I review for a couple of different places. Well, my real job is to teach film, and so I'm going way back. We just watched M by Fritz Lang today.
Nice.
Which, yeah, it's an early sound film, and one of the greatest performances by Peter Lorre. And it's a great movie about justice, and even though it's made in 1931, you're going to watch this and realize, you know, we still haven't sorted out all of these issues that they were sort of debating in that movie. And so it was ahead of its time far enough in 1931 that it still seems relevant.
You mean, because I don't think in this film there's a scene where the mob hold up a sign that says mission accomplished.
Oh, my goodness. No, they don't. No, they don't.
Now, I know you've been...
You love to use this, put things this way. So this is the best use of beggars ever as well.
Thank you. Hold your balloon, sir. Now, we're working on a shameless plug. I know you've also been working on a book about, surveillance, Big Brother, things like that.
It is, yeah. I'm afraid to jinx it. You know, the
this isn't Sports Illustrated. It's okay.
Okay. My own, superstitions there. Yeah, so I've been watching a lot of movies post 9/11 that feature some use of surveillance in one way or the other. And what I've realized is that there are scores of these movies just in the past 10 years or so that use it heavily. And so I've gone back and I watched Minority Report, which I think is going to age well. In fact, I think it may be more enjoyable now. Despite the really forced ending, I'm not going to defend the ending of that movie at all, but I think up until then it's quite solid, featuring that action star who has a movie coming out this week.
But he won't go back in time and stop the making of Vanilla Sky.
No, he can't do that. And apparently the precogs couldn't foretell to him that it was going to be an awful movie either.
Okay, fine.
There you go, I'm playing along.
Yes, I know. You're like my spouse. Just pat me on the head and give me a cookie and I'll be okay.
Yes, dear.
Then again, your wife has done that to me as well. So, no, what else? I know Minority Report. I couldn't remember if Enemy of the State was before or after 9-11. No, it was before 9-11.
It was before, but I think all of these movies, you know, all the paranoid thrillers to come in the last 10 years owe a great deal to Enemy of the State. It really sort of set the pattern. It drew on that pattern of the 70s, which you and I are both big fans of, but it sort of updated it with all the spying technology of the current day. And,
yeah.
And so that's a really solid one to go back and look at, despite Will Smith's him performance. I also checked out... Equilibrium. This is kind of the fun of writing a book like this. I hadn't seen some of these movies, and once in a while you make a little bit of a discovery. And Equilibrium, it's not billed as an adaptation of 1984, but it is. That's exactly what it is, and it's a nice update.
That's the one with Christian Bale.
It is. In the world of Equilibrium, just like in 1984, you are not allowed to show emotions. This is a totalitarian government you're living under, and so rather than calling it thought crime like Orwell did, they call it sense crime, and Christian Bale is the perfect casting choice for this role, because we all know if there's one sort of undeniable flaw in his acting, it's that he can be rather stiff and mechanical, but for this role, it's perfect. Because then he can also sort of break out of it and emote, which you know he's going to at a certain point. And this was a little bit of a surprise. It came out in 2002, and I'm not sure that it made it into many theaters.
No, it didn't.
It didn't, yeah. And so this is mostly a straight-to-DVD, and it's good.
Well, and I think he also blows his cover when the light guy moves during a shot.
Yes.
That was easy.
And thank goodness for modern surveillance devices, or we would have never had the audio for that particular blowout.
That is true. That is true. I played that instead of Rise of the Machines, or Terminator Salvation. Why play the trailer when I can play that?
Exactly. That's a better PR for the movie.
So now I'm going to pull up my black socks and tell these damn kids to go watch the Parallax View in the Conversation, you kids with your cameras that can see through walls.
Yeah, the Conversation pretty much does it all, in fact.
Is that your favorite of that genre?
Well, it's the one American movie that kind of delves into the psychology of somebody who does that for a living or on a regular basis. And that's a very interesting question to me. We talk all the time about, you know, regular citizens' privacy being invaded by those little audio and video recording devices. But what about the guy who's on the other end of those devices? You know, this is something that's sort of destructive to the person doing the watching, too. And it's a pretty fascinating look. And it's one of those, you know, Coppola, everybody remembers The Godfather, but a lot of people forget that he made this outstanding smaller movie early in his career, too.
And same year as Godfather 2. So he had two Best Picture nominations.
That's quite a year.
And, yeah, and I can't remember who came up with it first, but the one actor who pretty much batted 1,000 every film he was in was nominated for Best Picture. Do you remember who this is?
Oh, I should.
He's
now.
John Cazale.
Yeah, John Cazale.
Yep.
Yeah, outstanding. In fact, there was a really good piece that I read recently. I believe there is a documentary coming out about John Cazale.
That'd be great. That means we won't get it for 8 months. And if I bring up the conversation, I have to bring up The Lives of Others, a film that really deserved Best Foreign Film when it won.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the best movies of the past decade. And American audiences are, unfortunately, mostly unaware of it.
Yes.
And it can't be remade as an American movie. This is another reason to go see it.
Oh, yes, it could. They'll still make it in Germany, but it'll be in English. you laugh.
Yeah,
it sounds dumb, but you know it could happen.
Oh, I know it could happen. And we've seen worse. We've seen worse foreign remakes. But I don't know. The American audiences don't remember what the Stasi even was. So.
What? Sorry.
No, I'm going to pull up my black socks.
Get off my lawn. Damn kids. Jeez. Okay, one last question to wrap up, because we mentioned the kid. What old titles are you showing your child?
Well, he does love some of the early Pixar movies, but and, you know, this isn't exactly old, but the latest movie he's sort of found and really latched onto is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Decent. Visually cool.
I tell you what I love about it visually is it's clearly designed. I think a lot of people are pushing animation to go toward, you know, recreating humans and you know, in those highfalutin terms, we call it verisimilitude. They're trying to make everything look like the real world. Well, I don't agree with that. Animation should do what it does best, and that is be fanciful. It should be fantastic. And this is a movie that is clearly designed.
Yeah, and especially when you have a title with that, you know what it is going into. You know, it's not too big of a homage to the disaster movie, but, you know, you got food falling on you.
Yeah, which they of course have a great deal of fun with, but I think it's a witty little movie, and I thought it was better than most animated movies last year.
And
to open myself up again.
Well, last year I still think is going to go down as one of the best years for animation, period.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. And I think even when you're secondary, I mean, this year, of course, there were 5 nominees for Best Animated Feature, and I griped at no end at a couple of pictures that maybe didn't make it on that list. But when your second squad is something like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Ponyo, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, not at all. If you chose either one of those, or if you chose Up, or if you chose Fantastic Mr. Fox, that means that, you know, the rest of those movies are sort of third and fourth on your list, and that's outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff Marker, thank you so much for sitting in on Film Sociology. I know we'll have you back soon, and hopefully the people are blogging to you, but they're wearing pants as they're throwing their hatred in your direction.
I'm sure it'll die down. I'll say something right at some point, and they'll forget that I hated that movie they loved.
And then we'll hate another movie.
That's right.
Jeff Marker, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
So, on behalf of Jeff Marker, I'm Matthew Soucy. We'll have a few final words, and then go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.